Welcome to the Richie Flow Nutrition Podcast. My name is Cameron Borg. On this episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with Ulla Johansson. Ulla is a former associate professor at the Department of Neuroscience, Karolinska Institute. His research focuses on the biological effects of electromagnetic fields and the potential consequences of the unbridled expansion of global communications networks. He has been outspoken in his desire to inform the public of the known dangers of electronic devices and wireless technologies, particularly to children who are more susceptible to the effects. Due to the complex socio-political and economic relationships between telecommunications companies and public health sectors, Ulla's and others' work has been harshly criticized for being too dramatic and unfounded, despite the presence of thousands of peer-reviewed articles demonstrating detrimental biological effects of man-made electromagnetic fields dating back almost a century. Ulla's moral obligation to speak out about these negative health effects has impacted his career and research dramatically. To set the scene, man-made electromagnetic fields, such as those from Wi-Fi, cell phones, appliances, power lines, and more, represent a hyper-novel exposure for all life on Earth. The introduction and exponential proliferation of such emissions does not represent a change in magnitude, but rather a change in kind. Our environment is fundamentally different now compared to how it was just over a century ago. It could be seen as myopic to conceive that no ill effects could come from such a global experiment. Ulla is one of the few researchers to seek precaution with these technologies, particularly because they disproportionately affect children and fetuses. Our chronic exposure to novel electromagnetic fields potentially represents a poignant shift in the health of not only humans but all life on Earth. Meeting Ulla was so great. He is a warm and generous guy with a great sense of humor. It was such an honor to get the chance to speak with him in person. He also asked me to share information regarding fundraising for his research projects that we discuss in the podcast, so links to that will be in the episode notes. Before we start, please consider subscribing to my Substack, where I share my deep dives into topics like this. It's the best way to support me and the podcast while also getting my in-depth thoughts about these podcast topics. The link for this is in the episode notes. With all this being said, I hope you enjoy the episode. Ollie, is that how you say it?
Ollie? Yes. Ulle,
Ulle
in Swedish. So, you need to be depressed when you speak Swedish, you know.
So Ulle. I'm really trying to get it, but it's very counterintuitive for someone
of
with
course.
An Australian accent.
Yeah, of course, of course.
Ulle.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming to speak with me.
It's a great honor.
It's a real
to be
honor,
here.
Yeah.
And so, in your beautiful flat with a beautiful view, which
yes.
the viewers don't see, but it's spectacular looking out through the window.
It is, even during winter, we've got a beautiful day.
Yeah, it's beautiful, you know.
Yeah. So how did you get to become interested in looking at the biological effects of man-made electromagnetic fields?
Well, to make a long story short, I was working in basic and applied neuroscience at the Karolinska Institute. And one evening at 8 o'clock, I was about to leave. And one of the radio receivers was on. So I said to myself, I need to put it off, you know. And I went, and it was a matter of seconds. It's so odd. And I heard a woman talking about some electrical allergy. And I couldn't help myself. I had to listen. And she talked about a new category of people getting harmed in front of the very newly introduced computer screens. She was asking for expertise in clinical neurology. And I'm not a neurologist, but I thought, neuroscience, close enough. I know a bit about the brain, the spinal cord, the peripheral nerves, and the ganglia.
Yeah.
So, and her name, Kajsa Vedin, and she was representing the trade unions in Sweden and working on the west coast of Sweden in the second largest town, namely Göteborg. Mm-hmm. And so I called her the day after. I sat there for like 45 minutes listening to her, and I said that maybe I could help her. And she arranged a meeting and brought a physicist from Chalmers in Göteborg up to Stockholm, and we sat down and started to talk. And this is really the reason why we sit here today. This was 1981 or something.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a long, long time ago. And some years before that, 1977, I had understood that there were biological and health effects of artificial electromagnetic fields. There was a lot of descriptions around leakage of the blood-brain barrier, for instance. But that was in connection only with, should we say, artificial gadgets exposing rats, opening this mysterious blood-brain barrier. And that was done and presented, sorry, it was presented in Finland, and no one understood that Finland shortly after should change its name to Nokialand, because Nokia Consumer Electronics became one of the largest telecom industries in the world.
Yeah.
But that was not around the corner yet, you know, or it was around the corner, but not on the stage yet. So no one had really paid any attention, but I did, because I thought, wow, how elegant to open this blood-brain barrier using microwave exposures, just as we are exposed from the telecom tower outside of your house here, you know, today. And the question is, of course, what happened to rats 1977? Is that happening to people now?
Yeah.
And to dogs, cats, your goldfish, whatever you have? What's going on? That's the question. And of course, that got much more focused with this Kajsa Wedin interview on the radio in the beginning of the 80s. And as I say, had I sort of approached the radio a few seconds before turning it off, then I wouldn't be here, you know. It's so odd.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what happened to the precautionary principle? You know, usually, you know, when you're introducing something new into the environment that you don't really understand, surely the precautionary principle should reign supreme. But I assume at the time it was, well, it's non-ionizing, so there can't be any effects.
Well, that was the idea. And if there were any effects, they were only heating effects, thermal effects, and at very high exposure levels. So no one used the precautionary principle, but many have their own private precautionary principle. I could just mention one example, namely the world's insurance and reinsurance industry. There is not a single company that protects you from the safe radiation used, for instance, for telecommunication. They abandoned ship, I would say it's more than 25 years ago. I was at the conference, for instance, in London in 2002, and then you had like Lloyd's UK, the biggest insurance dealer in the world, Swiss Re from Switzerland, which is the biggest reinsurance dealer, a small company from Sweden at that time called If Scandia, and so on. And every one of their representatives said, for us coming from the insurance industry, there is not a question whether the microwaves and the electromagnetic fields used for telecommunication, for instance, if they are harming you or not. We know they are dangerous. The only question for us is who is going to pay in the future when people are craving compensation,
yeah,
maybe for a brain tumor, for electrohypersensitivity, or whatever it is. And we are not going to do that. And therefore, they stepped completely down from any form of responsibility for all types of electromagnetic fields and all types of health effects. And in a way, that's more telling than any test tube or rat or something I could show you here. I remember that people were, well, surprised and also rather shocked, realizing that they had paid, you know, insurance for their children, for instance, but it didn't cover this and a few other things. And they are not keeping it a secret, because this, what they call the blacklist, it's public. You can Google it and find it. And there are very few things on it. And insurance companies want to earn money, so they do insure gas-filled big transporting ships on the oceans, Beyonce's legs, I read, you know, so on, you know. I mean, they want to earn money, but some areas, no way. And the odd thing all these areas they step down from, they are sold to you and me as safe, like nanotechnology, which you find nowadays in water, air, soil, any products, cosmetics, healthcare products, and so everywhere, food, of course. But no, they don't touch it at all. And also gene-modified organisms like corn you can buy and eat, safe, but they don't think it's safe here, so.
Yeah, and that I know this is a problem, you know, this sort of liability shield.
Yeah.
It really is so telling, isn't it, about where we're at.
Yeah.
I mean, where there's money on the line, people aren't willing to, you know, speculate.
Yeah.
So it seems like they know.
Of course, you know, I mean, like, all the license agreements between operators and manufacturers of telecom technology, they have sentences completely removing all form of responsibility from their point of view, although they sell all the gadgets to the society as being safe. The same for the radiation protection authorities, who say that, well, it's safe, but just to be on the safe side, use it very shortly, keep it away from your body, et cetera, you know. And at this conference in London in 2002, there was a lawyer who asked a very important question, and he stepped over for the representatives of the various telecom manufacturers and operators, including the man from Sweden and Ericsson Telecommunication. And he asked them, and he said, well, guys, now you have heard that insurance companies, they don't touch it. They have stepped away completely. And you have listened to scientists like myself and others. So what are you going to do about it now? This hot potato is really in your lap. And I remember the telecom providers, especially the guy from Sweden, no snow in the world has been so white as his face was, you know. I mean, I thought he was going to have a heart attack or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were stunned, you know, to say the least. And it took them actually 5 years to come up with a solution to this rather delicate problem. And the solution is so simple, so smart. I have to sort of bow to them because it is smart. When you buy anything, it could be a laptop, it could be an iPad or a cell phone, it tells you up in this famous cloud in the instruction manual that you always, I repeat, always have to keep it at least 1 inch away from your body. People read head, but it doesn't say that, it's body. And this is so smart. Because when you buy, for instance, a cell phone in a nice cardboard package, well, you can look at it, but you cannot touch it. The moment you have touched it, you have violated the instructions. So in the future, in a court of law, if you say, well, I got the brain tumor, now I want to have economic compensation, you know, they will just, from the other side, say, well, which hand did you actually use when you used the phone? Well, it was mostly my right hand. But we told you couldn't.
Mm.
So they will be off the hook, you know, so smartly.
Yeah.
So,
has anyone won compensation?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
One, what I would call it, premier country would be Italy.
Okay.
They have at least 6 cases that have gone through the whole legal system, including the Supreme Court.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and they all said the brain tumor of the patient was due to their cell phone. So 6 times. But the thing is that in Italy, it is like in Sweden. I don't know exactly the numbers, but I guess you would get like maybe 50,000 Swedish crowns. That's $5,000.
Mm.
And a pat on your head, you know. Sorry, you are going to die earlier, but that's life, you know.
Mm.
But the interesting area is, of course, United States. And therefore, in the U.S., based on the legal affairs around cigarette smoking, they start, the lawyers, and they have for years worked on this, and they start at a claim of $100 billion U.S. dollars as a compensation. And That's one case, you know. Mm-hmm. And if one person in the US would win, and if it would be a Swedish Ericsson system, then the whole of Sweden immediately goes bankrupt.
Yeah.
Just one case. Yeah. And remember, they have 13,800 cases waiting in the US.
Wow.
So if they start winning, and it's really from a legal point of view, people here tell me it's just a matter of time. Mm-hmm. They can lose, but somewhere, sometime, someone will win.
Yeah.
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 And then the floodgates are open, you know.
Well, that's very, like, do you have a time frame within which you think this might start happening? Because, like you said, it's only a matter of time.
Yeah. I don't have a time frame, but some years ago, a friend of mine, Robert Färm and I, we wrote a letter to the Swedish Prime Minister, Stefan Löfven, and we just said that, hey, be careful here, because Sweden, both at the governmental level, the municipality level, the regional county council level, and private level, we have a lot of stocks and bonds in the telecom industry. So we are secured from that point of view. So maybe you should be careful and think twice about this. He didn't answer, but he gave it to another minister. She didn't answer either, but she gave it to a civil servant working at the governmental office. And since she didn't understand the issue, she answered like blah, blah, you know, it was just an empty answer, yeah. A lot of words, but nothing in
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And then we felt, at least the future needs to know this. So we wrote an article where we presented the letters in Swedish and the responses, and then we very, very, very carefully translated to English. So they could see both letters, the originals and the translations, because we feel that if this is going to happen in the future, maybe some historians, journalists, reporters are interested to see, well, at least these guys tried yeah. to warn them.
Yeah.
They didn't succeed, but they tried. And that's, how should I say, that's one of the core pillars in my life. I'm not a believer, but you can never be sure, you know. And I see how you stand in this line up to the pearly gates. You have died, and you see far ahead St. Peter, and he is telling people either to go into the Garden of Eden or, yeah, you know, to the party level. And then when you get up there, I don't want him to say, Olle, why didn't you tell people? You understood. It's okay if he says, you tried your hardest.
Yeah.
You failed, but you tried your hardest. No one wanted to listen, or very few, and they were not any key people. They turned their backs on you, and you tried, so please come into heaven. Mm-hmm. So the problem with heaven, as you know, as a sidetrack, is people always tell me, well, it's so empty. Mm. Do you see?
Yeah.
Most people are bad. You know?
Very philosophical.
Well, but I mean, every day, because I need to travel every day with the public transport here, you do see small children, toddlers, yeah. small children, teenagers. And I feel so stressed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I hope everything that we are talking about is wrong.
Me too.
Yeah,
I've never wanted to be more wrong about anything
exactly.
in my life.
No, I agree. But you know, wow, then tens of thousands of peer-review-based scientific publications in extremely well-known journals all must be wrong. And that has never happened before.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel stressed and ashamed. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. Actually, I have ideas about that. Like impact on fertility, for instance. So maybe, and let's see what it's coming down to, our grandchildren will not be able to get any children based on research done already in the 1990s, pointing to that this is bad transgenerational-wise for fertility, very bad. And after that, a lot of papers, especially from the US, came regarding the impact on sperm cells losing morphology, motility, quality, etc., you know. And when you ask experts in the area of fertility, they say, well, around the world, you see this type of downhill slope for male sperm cell quality. So it's dramatic, you know. And no one pays any attention. Well, you, of course, but and your listeners and viewers and so on. But most people don't pay any attention to this because we will never meet our grandchildren, you know. But they will be there. And then it's too late for them to call back to 2024 saying, hey, you need to stop this, you know.
It's very heartbreaking. You know, I'm the same as you. I'm on the train every day. And hardly a day goes by where you don't see a child in a pram with the phone.
I know.
And you just worry. And like you said, you just want to be wrong. I just want to be wrong about this because it is heartbreaking. But how do we quantify the change in our electromagnetic environment over the last 130 odd years? You know, I think you're... you came up with the figure that, you know, the something about the radio waves have increased 10 to the 18 power.
Well, actually, we can start with the power frequent magnetic fields, which is a long name for household electricity, compared to natural background, because there are 50 hertz and 60 hertz fields naturally. And if you compare to the natural background, as you say, 150 years ago, then actually that increase is the smallest recorded.
Right.
It's only 100 million times nowadays. And one of the strongest emitters of power frequent fields is, oddly enough, a cell phone. People are afraid of power lines, but they are often very far away. You know, they look ugly, but the strongest fields, and we're talking maybe 1,000 or 10,000 times higher, 100,000 times higher than the power line, are the gadgets you have, like your laptop and an iPad or cell phone. So that, and that's the smallest. But then if you go into the radio frequency fields and compare again with natural background, because there are such fields, again, naturally occurring, and then what I tell people, imagine that we shut off everything in society. All electricity, all television, all radio, all telecommunication, everything, 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 only keeping the third generation mobile telephony. And we look at that specifically, and then the increase that is allowed is in the order of 10 up to the power 18.
And that's just with the third generation?
Only the third generation. And adding to it, you have to realize that the type of fields we're talking about, they are completely artificial. So in a way, if you compare artificial with natural, regardless of the distance, then it's an infinite increase, of course, you know, because it's never been around on the planet. And again, I hope we are wrong. I mean, but Jesus, so much science data that needs to be violated and proven to be wrong. And people have tried, of course, through replications to prove earlier scientists wrong, but they have failed. Again and again, they show that it's the same as before. So something is going out on the out there, you know. And, well, I tried.
Well, I mean, the reason I think it's so concerning is because it's an environmental signal that we're getting that's novel, like you said. I mean, this is not something that we had even any of.
In
the past. So it's not just a change in magnitude, it's a change in kind.
Completely.
And I think those are the things that we should be most worried about when it comes to biological effects. And the way I see it, we've got two changes of kind. It's synthetic chemicals that never existed before that we manufactured, and man-made electromagnetic fields that never existed before. Surely these should be the places we start with when we're trying to figure out what's going on with human health. Why has it changed so dramatically over the last century? And that seems like the logical starting point because these are the novel exposures.
And I don't want to sort of rip away any fun things from people. But of course, I mean, instead of having a wireless iPad or laptop or whatever, they could have a wired, shielded one. And of course, the information, the programs, the games will be exactly the same,
yes.
Nothing
yep.
different, but they cannot easily carry them with them. So maybe they have to stick to an old-fashioned system where you watch television in your home, not in the underground, et cetera, you know.
Yeah.
And I feel if that means that the future of mankind is secured, that's a cheap price to
yes.
pay, very cheap, you know.
I couldn't
it's actually
agree more.
Not the price at all, I would say.
You know? Yeah. And I mean, you talk about, you know, trying your best to
yeah.
sort of spread the message.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very reminiscent of what, you know, Robert Becker and Andrew Marino did back in the 60s and 70s
yeah.
With, you know, very little success.
Yeah.
I mean, they were sort of laughed at
yeah.
in a sense. And Andrew Marino became a lawyer just because they were having so much trouble, you know, communicating this information to the public.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been in contact with Andrew Marino and I think he's still trying very,
oh, no, yes,
very hard
indeed, yes.
to basically leave this behind and say, look how hard we tried
yeah.
to get this across. I really do hope it's just a matter of time before people start, you know, looking back on this and going, we've known for a really long time that these effects exist.
Yeah.
And, you know, what are the roadblocks in the way? What are the biggest ones that you see that are preventing us from making a step forward? Like you said, it's not that difficult to use an Ethernet cable.
Exactly.
Particularly in schools. Like,
yeah.
it wouldn't be that hard to take the Wi-Fi
yeah.
out of schools. You know, the kids are the most vulnerable
yeah.
and the ones we need to protect the
I
most.
I mean, there are movements now that are sort of picking up speed, and one of are based on screen time for children.
Mm.
And it has nothing to do with the radiation or health effects. It's a behavioral one where they spend too much time with their screens and too little time with their school books and the teacher and the parents, etc. That could generate the movement, maybe. But also, I think what needs to be done is that someone, maybe right now while we talk, someone is sitting in a garage here in Hammarbyhöjden inventing tomorrow's green, human and environmental friendly technology based on some other principle which we don't know anything about today.
Mm.
So maybe that could be also a can opener in a sense. And then, of course, politically, people have to, at the top level, say, this is important. We need to have a moratorium until we can wave the green flag instead of waving red flags all the time, you know.
Yeah.
And the question also boils down to how much are we worth, in a sense, you know. Is it only profit that should rule the world, or is there some other principles? And I see more and more people around, there are not many, but there are people more and more looking at the quality of life, the meaning of life, not being only earning money, not only profit and greed. Let's hope.
Mm.
But, you know, some days I'm very optimistic. Some days I'm very pessimistic.
Yeah.
And being a Swede, of course, that's natural to be pessimistic, you know. We are constantly depressed, you know, so that's all right. But I see still quite good glimmers of hope. I would, and it's very difficult to say who is going to break the ice and when. I don't know, but I hope it will happen.
So there are all of these different frequencies that we're exposed to,
yeah.
depending on
yeah.
the type of technology.
Yeah.
Are there? You know, there's a principle that whatever can be a poison can also be a medicine,
yeah,
and vice versa.
True.
Are there frequencies that you think might be less harmful or might be, you know...
Very interesting point.
Yeah.
We are trying and have tried for quite some time to study what is called frequency or energy medicine.
Mm.
And we have not been able to get people on board. We have a fundraiser call. But today when I sit with you, we have like $1,000. You cannot do anything
yeah,
with that, you know.
Yeah.
You need a lot more. But we have met people with different treatment gadgets and good results, and we would like to replicate their treatment regimes and in a controlled, standardized way. And they are very open to it, but we need money.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So it's
yeah.
a very interesting thing because And of course, in a sense, you can say it could be a potential threat to the big pharmaceutical sector. Instead of taking a pill, maybe you just expose yourself for a good frequency. You can do it back home. There could be gadgets you can use back home, you know, that will fix some of the things that we fix together with drugs instead today. So it's potentially very, very interesting, yes.
Mm-hmm. Are there ways to, you know, I don't know very much about this, I'm not a physicist, but are there ways to potentially use inverted waves to sort of cancel out?
Yeah, like yes, indeed. And there are a lot of different physical tricks to be employed, but again, we know too little. Yeah. I don't dare to even go in any special direction.
But
I mean, I'm taught to be a scientist, an academic scientist. So this is my sort of playground. I could investigate the gadgets people are using, claiming very good treatment results, but in a controlled way, double blind, et cetera, you know. And I say again, people are very interested in this field to do these kind of experiments. Mm-hmm. So, wow, tell your people that are looking to send the money and we can do it really, you know.
So. Yeah. Are there dangers for, you know, maybe people who are looking to do their PhD and looking for a direction in research? Are there dangers going into this area? I mean, I imagine it's a...
Well, that's a very smart question. I would definitely say yes. Mm. And I remember, for instance, I had a colleague, I think he's retired now too, and when I worked at the Karolinska Institute, he came up behind me and he said, "Oh, Ole, what you are doing, I would say, is the most important project at the Karolinska Institute." I was extremely flattered, you know, and I said to him, "Well, couldn't you go public and say this?" "Oh, no. Never mention my name. Yeah. I've seen what happened to you.
Yeah.
I don't want to go down that alley, you know."
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And I never told anyone his name, you know.
Mm.
But he was still, and he was a very smart professor, I must say. So he still reckoned that this is important to investigate. And I say again, as the normal fire brigade, realizing it's a false alarm, I will not cry.
Mm-hmm.
I will be happy if everything is safe, but we need to really base it on evidence that are rock solid,
yeah.
Because we are exposing everyone. And don't forget, now we talk about one out of 8.7 million species on this planet. Everyone else is exposed as well, you know.
Yeah.
Well, maybe with the exception of deep sea creatures and so on, you know. But we are exposed. Dogs, cats, goldfishes, your pet, your livestock, anything, the wild animals in the forest, they are exposed.
Mm.
People are reporting, for instance, I heard, what could it be, like 4 years ago maybe, reports from England regarding fertility of dogs from breeder organizations saying that something is odd. And I wrote to the guy, I said, maybe you should also investigate the exposures from artificial electromagnetic fields. And he was very, very thankful. And I don't know exactly what they did after that, but it is a factor. And also the combination, you mentioned chemicals before. There could be combinations of chemicals and radiation. And don't forget, and again, that's very solidly shown, the deleterious effects on the DNA molecule that are broken from the exposure of cell phone radiation, for instance. And that has been shown over and over again. And no one reacts. Mm. I mean, maybe I'm over-exaggerating, but sometimes, you know, when I ride a bus or a tram or underground, I have an urge to just step up and scream, you know, and tell them, do something, react and act.
Yeah, I know Martin Blank has done a lot of great work. I think it's heat shock protein 70.
Yeah, exactly.
With exposure, you know, very, very small fields as well. You know, it doesn't take very much to get these markers of undeniable genetic damage.
Well, I mean, for your viewers and listeners, it's important to realize everything we have been talking about are from safe exposures.
Exactly.
Yeah. There is no big over-the-top exposures. No, it's the everyday exposures that when they are checked in the laboratory, suddenly you realize, oops, what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think one of the things that gets thrown around a lot as a, you know, sort of a, oh, this can't be true because we don't, there's no mechanism by which these fields can be impacting biological systems. Now, I know in 2013, Martin Paul published about, you know, calcium channels being affected, calcium efflux.
Yeah.
I know Martin Blank talking about these undeniable evidence of genetic damage.
Yeah.
I know there are lots of different...
heat shock proteins.
Stress, just general stress.
Oxidative stress at the cellular level.
Exactly. So what are the ways in which the man-made fields that we're living in are impacting the body?
Well, you have mentioned a lot of possibilities. Again, we don't know for sure, but there is so many pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, so it's impossible. I mean, the most common question I get over the phone, for instance, is that people would ask, is this safe for my son or daughter? And I could never say yes. I have to say no.
Yeah.
I cannot, you know, blindfold you. This is not safe. Mm. And then we can talk for hours and hours and hours about possible mechanism. And when people say, oh, there are nothing on the mechanistic side, hey, why don't you start read these 200 papers first?
Yep, yep.
And then I could give you 200 more, you know. And then, of course, they get rather surprised because they have been taught somewhere in society that there is risk, there is nothing. To be seen here. Move away.
No risk by definition.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think the thing that's most interesting to me is our bodies have their own fields. You know, in every mitochondria, we've got electrons and protons, you know, at huge gradients.
Yeah.
And I think one of the most interesting things to think of, and these are just basic physical principles, you know, we don't have to think about, you know, biochemistry or anything like that. But, you know, if you overlay a man-made field onto the electron transport chain, even the smallest field could perturb that chain. And we know that most diseases are, you know, really problems with mitochondrial biodynamics.
Yeah.
And you know, are we impacting the way that we're generating energy? And it seems to me, just, I'm not a physicist, but it seems to me that basic physical principles would say if you put a field over that, it's going to change the way that those charges move.
Of course.
So the implications of that are...
Yeah. And, you know, also at the kind of basic biological side, if we go back to the 80s, what we did was that we got skin biopsies, small pieces of skin, from persons that had what was called at that time electrical allergy.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, it's a functional impairment or variability called electrohypersensitivity. And within quotation marks, unfortunately, we found dramatic alterations, especially regarding a cell type that is called mast cells. And it has nothing to do with telecom masts. It's a German term, and these cells, they are look fat, and in German that's mastig, and therefore they are called mast cells. And they contain heparin, histamine, and they are sort of the final common denominator when we talk about allergies, oversensitivities, asthmas. So when people say, oh, they are electrically allergy, and they laughed at these people, you know, they were maybe completely right. They are allergic to the exposures, and these cells react, and they react exactly in the same manner as they would do if the exposure instead was ionizing radiation like ultraviolet light, X-rays, alpha, beta, gamma radiation, mm-hmm. exactly the same way.
Yeah, right.
But now it's non-ionizing, safe radiation, and they still react in the same way. And we also did a very, very interesting study where we took students, medical and dental students, and they sat with their back towards household television sets, household computer screens, at an exposure distance, I think it was 40 centimeters, which is a normal viewing distance.
Yeah.
And then we took skin biopsies on their back before, during, and after they had been exposed. And to make a long story short, they reacted in the same way as if they would have been sitting next to radium, plutonium, uranium, X-ray or something. But they were not. They were only exposing their back to these television sets and computer screens. And the funny thing was also, they had no subjective sensations.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
But their skin cells, the mast cells, they reacted, you know.
It's very pernicious,
yeah,
isn't it?
Is, yeah, it is. It is. It is. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
And I understand that these frequencies, particularly Wi-Fi, I think, sort of destabilize the mast cells and cause them to degranulate,
yes,
and release.
That's what it looks like, yes.
Yeah, so,
and again, we would love to continue doing studies, but, you know, I'm a very old man, retired, and it's very difficult to get money from anywhere in this society. But we are trying, I promise you, you know. So
It's upsetting to me because mast cell activation syndrome is something that's really taking off in the functional medicine space.
Yeah.
But no one's talking about, you know, have you tried turning the Wi-Fi router off at night?
And I get, constant emails from medical doctors and professors in science asking me, why do we see this mast cell activation syndrome? And they don't have a clue. They are trying to understand, is it something in the food or where is it? And then I tell them, have you looked in the air? Oh, in the air, there is nothing. Well, there are things that are not visible to the human eye, you know.
Yeah.
And at levels that are only to, I mean, if we go back to the third generation exposure levels, I mean, I'm not fluent in English. I don't know, are these levels colossal? Are they astronomical? Are they biblical? Or are they all three? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you imagine tomorrow morning when you wake up, the outdoor temperature has increased 10 to the power 18, then not only Hammarbyhöjden will be, obliterated, but the entire planet like this.
Yeah.
I mean, the temperatures we're talking about are just not understandable. Inside... our sun is only 12 million degrees. It's just cool and nothing compared to those exposures, you know.
Yeah.
So, I hope I'm wrong.
Well, this brings up a great point about the sort of non-linear dynamics of exposure to these fields. It seems as though it's not just that, you know, you increase by a power of 10 and you get an equivalent biological response. It's not like that at all. And I think this has sort of hampered the research to an extent.
Indeed.
Because people are always looking for linear correlations, like sort of this perfect dose response.
Yeah.
And we don't get that dose response with electromagnetic fields. And I think that's partly because our stress responses are so good, they sort of offset it to a certain extent.
I agree. And also in biology and medicine, power is very rarely of any essence.
Yeah.
For instance, if I want to kill you, I could scream, I'm going to stab you. Or I can tell you in a normal voice, or I could whisper, or I could only think I'm going to kill you. And the outcome is still the same.
Yeah.
You will die.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the information content, not the power level, that is of importance here, you know.
Well, that brings up a really good point about each successive generation. Now, I don't understand extremely well the difference between each generation of communications networks, but I think as we go up, the information that's contained within is more sort of scrambled. And how does that impact? I mean, there's been quite a bit of talk about the safety of the fifth generation.
For instance, and now around the corner, you have the sixth generation already. And the fifth generation is interesting because the general average power level will be less than the fourth generation and the third. But the information content, as you say, is going to be more and more artificial.
Yeah.
And at some point, you will have an impact at the crucial ionic channel, mast cell, release of its content, DNA, whatever, or a combination of them. And suddenly you are in an alley where you cannot turn back. Now, I hope we still can turn back, but maybe not in the future. And I saw, just a sidetrack in a sense, but there are quite a number of scientific groups that have exposed bacteria. They have used, for instance, GSM, the second generation mobile telephony, or super modern Wi-Fi router exposures. And again, to shorten the story, what happens is basically nothing with the bacteria. They look and seem to behave normally, except for one little detail. They become antibiotic resistant.
Just a minor detail.
Yeah, minor. Yeah. Very small. And you know, I think it was yesterday, I saw just a glimpse in a program. There was some, Nobel laureate even, who said that we will probably run out of useful antibiotics within 20 to 30 years from now on.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, then people will start to die again from a splinter in their finger, as we did at the end of the 1900th century. There are even big books that has been written about this here in Sweden. And we will be back there, you know. The doctors will not have any chance to treat anything, you know. Your child is running and falling over and get a scratch on the... And they are dead within 3 weeks, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean... Wow. And I understand that people are stressed about this. And I remember I talked with a relative who is an orthopedic surgeon, and she said, you know, one interesting thing, that it's a dramatic situation, and people are trying to find new antibiotics, but we are not allowed to talk about it in public. I mean, it's like 1984, you know, George Orwell, you know.
Yeah.
Just don't say anything, you know. You don't want to upset people out there, you know.
Yeah,
And she was very stressed. She said, you know, like, my work as an orthopedic surgeon will basically be impossible in the future.
Yeah.
I mean, the risks will be... you can just as well club the man to death immediately, you know. It's easier and quicker and cheaper. So people don't understand when... I look at you, for instance, depending on books I read, somewhere in the order of 50, 60, 70% of the cell count in your body are bacteria.
Yeah.
And they run the show, really, you know, in the body. So if you affect them, and again, people, oh, they are so weak, feels weak compared to what?
Mm.
To natural background, then they are more than biblical, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And I remember during the pandemic, there was an interview with one of the officials of the World Health Organization in Geneva in Switzerland, and he was asked if the COVID-19 is the worst threat to mankind. And he kind of smiled and said, no, we will be able to manage that. That's not a big threat at all. But the reporter was very persistent and said, well, what is the big threat then, you know? Well, that's easy to answer, he said. That's antibiotic resistant in healthcare, you know.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, not only do you have these nonlinear dynamics, it seems to me as though each individual has their own sort of susceptibility criteria.
Yeah,
so
of course.
Even if the next generation comes out, there may be a subset of the population that's extremely affected
exactly.
for whatever reason, maybe the morphology of some enzyme or something.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the population might be fine. And of course, they'll all go, what are you talking about? There's no effects at all.
Exactly.
And who's going to be willing to have a look at this subset of population, study them intently and try and figure out what's going on?
Oh, that's so smart, because... We didn't really want to look at the subsets, but we wanted to look at one subset that we often talk about, namely healthy people.
Yeah.
And then we wanted to take a small town in Sweden called Ljungby. I think it's like 13, 14,000 people. We wanted to remove from the healthy, normal people everything electromagnetic, like television, radio, wireless telecommunications, so maybe for 1 or 2 years, and see if they would actually become more healthy, because there are quite a lot of studies indicating that you will increase your health if you down stress, leave the cell phone back home, don't have it with you, don't allow yourself to answer emails in the middle of the night and so on. but also from a radiation exposure point of view, what would actually happen. But then we were not allowed to do it because, and I quote, it was unethical to remove the television and radio and so on. And with all due respect for people that make public TV and radio, etc., it's not that fascinating. You know, they're rather, rotten programs, you know.
Yeah.
Game shows and news that are no news and weather forecasts no one has any use for and so on, you know. So, yeah, I wasn't so impressed. But maybe there is, I don't know what you say in English, there is like a hand behind that steers science. And some things are very good and very interesting, but some, no, don't go there.
Yeah.
And again, I get stressed because, as you say, you have the subsets, but from these fertility studies, there were no subsets.
It's everyone.
Everyone would become non-fertile within 150 to 200 years' time, you know.
Yeah, and then you've got every guy with his phone directly in his
and
pocket.
And you don't even need to have one, because if you move around, you're exposed, again, at colossal levels, you know.
Yeah. And then, you know, you're on the train that's moving and it's pinging because it's trying to pick up the nearest signal
of
as you're moving.
Yeah,
so
of
you're on a train with hundreds of people.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and it just seems like every human is living in a constantly, you know, stressed state.
Yeah.
And it's weird
and people,
because...
people complain about it too.
Mm.
Oh, I'm so stressed. I don't have time to come to the dinner you're offering. And no, I'm too stressed.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because there's... scarcely a human on the planet now that knows what it's like to live in a native electromagnetic environment.
Yeah.
No one. Yeah. I've never known that environment.
Yeah.
My body has never experienced the environment that my body has evolved specifically for.
Yeah. And even when you were just a sperm cell and an egg cell in your father and mother, you were still exposed.
Yeah.
And even as a progenitor cell, before the final sperms and the final egg, you were still exposed.
Yeah.
Everyone, everywhere, are constantly exposed, you know.
Mm.
So you understand that being not a believer, I still go down on my knees every evening and say, please, God, make me wrong.
Yeah, well, I can imagine that it doesn't require a belief in a higher power to wish you were wrong.
Yeah.
Because if you're right, the amount of suffering, needless suffering that's happening is...
And
is,
already has happened.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, for instance, about... the functional impairment, the electron hypersensitivity. And, you know, I met yesterday a very intelligent woman who works with handicap issues. And from her, I learned many years ago that when you make your society accessible for a certain group with a disability, for instance, a movement disorder, here in Sweden we have faced-off sidewalks, we have kneeling buses, we have a lot of things that would help a person in a wheelchair, but everyone gains from that. The man with the baby pram, the bicyclist, and the person with the shopping cart and so on, they use the faced-off sidewalk. So everyone gains. And then people realize that, for instance, for electrohypersensitivity, if we would take steps backwards and make society accessible, then maybe you and I will not get a brain tumor in 30 years.
Yeah.
So win, win, win. You know? And also, I mean, I can't help to be impressed by industry and inventors and entrepreneurs, because if they would come up with a sense that they need to produce tomorrow's green, human, and environmentally friendly technology, just imagine to sell... all cell phones again, all cables, all laptops, all computers, all everything. And, of course, being egoistic, I hope it's a Swedish company that will do this, you know.
Any company.
Yeah, any
care.
Company.
I don't care who it is. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, the amount of money to be earned on safe products. And I often think about... in the early days, we talked, and that was before cell phones and so on, we talked about low radiation computer screens. And just think about going into the city center here, put yourself on Hötorget, for instance, the big square, trying to sell with a slogan saying, oh, this is a high radiation computer screen. no one would buy it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. So there is a momentum in healthy products that I hope the industry and finance sector will pick up on before it's too late.
Do you think that there's a chance? I mean, I see this quite a bit. The opportunity for bastardization of this type of technology. You have people selling stickers that you put on the back of your phone that are supposed to harmonize. I mean, to me, these seem like absolute nonsense.
Yeah. There's snake oil.
There's no way that that can...
No.
Yeah, okay. All right.
And we have investigated quite a number.
Right, you have. Okay.
Yes, we have. And the ones that are based on ordinary school book physics, they work, like microwave shielding cloth.
Yes.
That works.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, it's basic textbook physics.
Yeah.
The stickers and the pendants and whatever, pyramids and whatever they are, crystals.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, because everyone knows if you put your phone in the microwave and close the door and you call it, it won't ring because... No microwaves are able to come in and out.
Exactly.
So that makes sense that if you put something in there, you're completely, it's like a Faraday cage, I guess.
And that's also the only remedies for an electro-hypersensitive person, either distance from the source or shielding or a combination of both.
Do you think that shielding, I know there are people who sleep with
the canopies. Yeah.
I mean, you're blocking out everything, though.
Yeah.
Is there a detriment to that? You're blocking out the Schumann resonance and you're blocking out the native ones
as
well.
Yes.
Do you think that it's a net benefit to block out the man-made ones but also block out the natural ones? Or?
Oh, we need to investigate that.
Yeah.
But it's a very, very crucial question because people do invest in that kind of things and shielding paint, shielding cloth, shielding curtains and so on.
Yeah.
And maybe they are blocking out the good fields as they are. And I remember we were able to use one of Siemens made, I don't know what you call it, it's a completely shielded cubicle, big rooms, like your flat, very big.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the biggest you can actually move a 747 aircraft into, you know, they're very big.
Wow.
And they look upon effects of electromagnetic signals like a beam from lightning or something.
Mm-hmm.
But here we had electro-hypersensitive people and we had normal healthy volunteers and we brought them to this room and it was so fascinating because everyone, including myself, felt, and I quote, something is missing.
Yep. Yeah.
And, you know, my hair still stands up on my head, you know.
Mm.
And, wow. Then I got... And this was in the 80s somewhere, you know. And then also that produced the idea to maybe remove, as I said, in Ljungby, in Småland, from a town, all radiation to see what will actually happen. And we thought that maybe the healthy people would become more healthy... Mm. Or there will be no effect. Or if we move too much, maybe they will go in the other direction. But we were not allowed to investigate that. You know,
so. Yeah, well, I can imagine. Yeah, but it would be...
But, you know, it's so interesting because imagine that they just slightly become more healthy and then you extrapolate to the population worldwide... The gain...
Trillions of dollars.
Yeah, I mean,
trillions
more,
of dollars.
More,
yeah.
You know, I mean... Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And why couldn't we investigate it, you know?
Well, it would be in every government's best interest to do so.
Yeah, yeah. And nowadays, since I'm in healthcare, I see that there are more and more products trying to, for instance, elderly men and women, they are constantly screened before they get ill. So you can pick up a serious illness because that's so much cheaper for society instead of putting you in an ambulance and saying, oh, now we need to really treat you, you know.
Yeah.
So they understand that part, but not all facets of it, you know.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that's really interesting to me is this sort of association that keeps coming up in different populations, and that's of childhood leukemia.
Yeah.
And I think it's a distance from, is it cell towers or high voltage power lines?
That's high voltage power lines.
Mm-hmm.
And not only the power lines, I would call it extremely low frequency electromagnetic fields, which we sit in here too, of course, and their association with childhood leukemia.
Yeah.
And 2001, the World Health Organization in Geneva, cancer classified this as a possible carcinogen, and it's still valid. 10 years after 2011, May 31st, they also cancer classified all radio frequency fields, but then it was in association with brain tumors, still valid.
Yeah.
So you have two, and no one knows who I am, of course, here in Sweden. So when I walk around, I would talk to people, ordinary people, and just ask them, do you know that the fields are cancer classified by the World Health Organization? And was it 1 or 2 years ago, I was in a commuter train here in Stockholm, and there was a posh lady, and she was fiddling with her smartphone. And I turned to her and said, do you know that the Geneva World Health Organization has cancer classified the fields that are coming from and going to your cell phone, your smartphone? And she went ballistic, you know, and told me to go to a very warm place, I could tell you, and mind my own business. And I was just a stupid idiot. I didn't know anything and so on. Yeah. And I said, no, wait. You have a smartphone. Couldn't you please Google WHO brain tumor and cell phones? She did and went silent for maybe a minute or two. Mm. And then slowly she looked up at me and said, I'm so sorry. It's all here. You were completely right, sir. But now I get pissed again. And not at you, but I get angry again, she said, because, you see, I am not only a mother, I'm also a grandmother. Mm. And a week ago, I gave my 14-year-old granddaughter a new smartphone. And now I regret it, and I'm angry because the government, parliament, health authorities, why have they not instructed us about this? And then, unfortunately, I had to leave the train, so I don't know how the story ended. Mm. But I sort of said to her that, please write to your government and your parliament here in Sweden and tell them that you are upset because you are not informed.
Yeah.
So
why leukemia? Why do you think there's such a strong association between that specific pathological condition?
I wish I had an answer. But I don't, and I know in the future people, scientists and medical doctors will find the answer, and for me it will just be speculations, but of course the impacts on the DNA is enough to generate alterations in crucial key cells, which the doctor then informs the patient, or the parent rather, that your child has got childhood leukemia, you know. And again, we are really playing with God's creation here in a sense. Don't forget the other 8.7 million species. They have kids too, you know.
Yeah. I know bees are incredibly affected.
Yeah.
And they find it very difficult to find flowers. And, they're very, very affected.
Yeah.
And the impact of bees being affected.
And there we have tried and we have worked together with different persons around the world, and I have written a few papers around that, more as a red flag. Hey, come and look in this corner too, you know.
Yeah. That brings up an interesting point about the sort of synergies we touched on it before.
Yeah.
I know you've written a paper about atrazine sort of synergizing.
Yeah.
And I often think about heavy metals as well because, you know, there might be a connection between having
and
these.
And there is. Yeah. There is, you know, for heavy metals like dental restoration materials, people have shown that there's a covariation. So the exposures seem to extract the metal content, and that will then circulate in your body, in your blood and other tissues.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a connection. Again, we would love to, and we had a collaboration with a fantastic dentist, Marianne Forsell. But here's it, you know, and the time is running away and there is no money. We have no possibility to do anything really. You know, so.
Yeah, were there any sort of speculative thoughts about how this might be happening? I know blood is, you know, it's obviously rich in oxygen. I believe oxygen is sort of paramagnetic as well.
And
it's, you know, rich in iron. So you've got all these, these minerals.
And the hemoglobin and so on, you know, you have a lot. And the ferritin content, et cetera. So you have a lot of sort of layers you can attack as an exposure. Again, we need more studies. But it actually started with two scientists in Göteborg, Högstedt and Örtendahl. And this is probably in the 80s. It's a long time ago.
Mm.
Professional, occupational divers, when they work underwater, they have high-tension tools for welding, for instance. And, you know, there could be movements in the water, streams and so on. So they often take the cable, one coil around their neck to be able to stabilize the instrument they are using. And then it was reported that they lost their dental fillings.
Wow.
They didn't feel anything. They were just like this, gone after a few weeks. And that was, of course, a nuisance. So these two guys, they were set to investigate, could it be the electromagnetic fields, which are really high-level exposures, of course, in the power-frequent magnetic field range. So they took, or what you say in English, test bits of dental restoration material and put them in front of ordinary personal computer screens. And then they measured the evaporation of mercury.
Mm-hmm.
And when they turned on the screens, it increased.
Wow.
Quite a lot, actually. And it was dependent on, actually, the brand. And I don't recall exactly, but some didn't do anything, and some were quite bad to extract the mercury. And, of course, amalgam, which is used, is not only made on mercury. There are nickel, for instance, which is maybe the most known allergen. So, you see, you expose suddenly your body, and also it's expensive to have them redone, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Yeah,
this is a big problem because heavy metal toxicity is something that's ever increasing.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the increased industrialization of our food, there's constantly contamination.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you said, not just you know, arsenic, cadmium, but also nickel and tin and things like that we don't typically think of.
And then you
of.
Have yourself or your family sitting there eating purple cereals, which you never found out in the reality, you know?
Yeah.
And at the same time being exposed from your own gadgets as well as from cell phone towers and so on, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
I mean,
Well, we can only imagine the complex interactions between all of these synthetic things, like you said, completely novel.
Yeah.
And we're putting them all together and saying, well, good luck.
Yeah.
I have to ask you about melanoma.
Okay.
Coming from Australia, it's something that I've been very interested in. I've spoken to a lot of researchers who have looked into skin physiology and sort of the dynamics and the nature of who gets melanoma. And it really looks to me as if melanoma is not caused by increasing exposure to sunlight. In fact, it's probably the opposite. And it looks like there's another part of this story that we're really there's puzzle pieces missing in the melanoma story, basically. Yeah. And you've published several papers with Halberg, about the potential missing pieces to this story, which I found very interesting.
Well, I mean, we did such very simple studies. Mm. We looked in Sweden and in a lot of other countries where you suddenly had a dramatic shift in the incidence.
Yeah.
They started to increase dramatically, and it was not at the same year or same date. And then we looked at the exposure from FM radio, which is a body resonant exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough,
when you say body resonant, you mean the wavelength is roughly equivalent to the length
exactly.
of the body.
Exactly. Yeah. 100 megahertz, 3 meters, and half length, 1.5 meters.
Yeah.
Everyone, at least in Sweden, knows this actually because in the 50s and 60s, we had what we called transistor radios in the kitchen often. And I remember my father, because the reception was bad and the antenna was a very weak thing, you know, and he ran up and grabbed the antenna and then the reception was perfect because my father was a much better antenna, you know.
Yeah.
So he stood there listening to something on the radio, you know, I remember that. And he was in his underwear, I remember. But we looked at this and it turned out that within a few months after FM radio is turned on in a certain country. And for instance, in Estonia and the other countries around on the east side of the Baltic Sea, they did it 1992 And then they had the increase in melanoma.
Same happened in Brisbane as well, yeah.
And Sweden, 1955, the same.
Yeah.
And then we just said that maybe feeding these colossal amounts of energy may not only be good for you, it could help people grow, cells grow in people.
Yeah.
We were very sort of mild about this and just pointed to a possible hypothesis. And many, many people have liked these papers a lot. I see they are very often quoted. So this is a growing idea. But again, we need more flesh on the bones, I would say, you know. Mm. So.
And that connects directly back to immunity in general.
Yes.
And I think one of the scariest things to think about is that global immunity is being impacted.
Yeah.
It's not just sort of, you know, these fields impact one disease process.
No,
here.
No.
We're talking about the fundamental functioning of the immune system
yeah.
is being sort of disturbed or it's,
yeah.
you know, it's being... you know, thrown off
yeah.
by these fields. And you've written quite a lengthy paper. I can't remember exactly what it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
But about how these fields are perturbing.
Yeah, it started actually as a chapter in something called the Bioinitiative Report. And then we were asked, a few of us, if we would like to turn our chapters into a peer-review-based publication in a journal called Pathophysiology. And I said yes, and then I rewrote the entire chapter and added a lot of more details. When I had finished the manuscript, I felt very uncertain. I felt that something must be wrong because my conclusions in the paper were quite astonishing, I would say.
Yeah.
So I went over from the Karolinska Institute to the Karolinska Hospital because one of the foremost experts in the immune system was working there. And I asked her, could you please read my manuscript? Maybe you will not like it, and you tell me what's wrong with it. Okay, she said. And after like 3 weeks, she came back and said, no, there is nothing wrong in this manuscript. And I'm shocked about what you write here, you know. So just go ahead and submit it. And I did, and it was published. And what I found was that when I connected the dots from various laboratories, I saw that initially when you expose a system, immune system, to man-made electromagnetic fields, it will react as it would against any form of allergen. So it will activate itself to fight out this. But after some time, it seems to lose its capacity and completely deteriorates. And it is, of course, tempting to speculate, has that something to do, for instance, with the recent pandemic, with the ill health that is reported all over the world, and with a lot of different illnesses that are increasing? I don't know, of course, but this is now, it was published 2010, I think, if I remember. No, 2009, sorry.
Yes, 2009.
Yes. Yeah. So it's old, in a sense.
Yeah.
But again, where are the people that should react and act upon it? Where are they?
What did this immunology professor, did she keep in contact with you after that?
Oh, she did, yes. And I sent her the ready-made publication, and we had ideas that we would sort of collaborate, doing something, but we never came around because I didn't have the resources to do it. But it's still a very important area, actually, a very important area.
Mm. And, you know...
And again, sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay.
Don't forget, there are 8.7 million other species with immune systems.
And this concept fits perfectly with Hans Selye's, you know, stress response, you know, where you have this stress, then you have this sort of adaptation phase, and then you just have this fall off where the
completely.
Body...
And it went, you know, below the zero level.
Yes.
It just deteriorated.
Yeah.
It started to leak completely.
And I think this was one of the things that Becker and Marino came up against is that if you measure, you know, if you get animal models and you measure them at the right, in the adaptation phase where the immune response hasn't, you know, completely crashed, then you go, well, they're fine.
Yeah, they're fine, yeah.
So it was, I remember in their books, they talked about everyone was just measuring at this medium point where the stress response had sort of balanced out and it was sort of keeping things at a neutral point. But if you keep looking at them, they all just die very quickly.
Yeah.
And that was one of the main reasons I think Marino became a lawyer, was because to explain the fact that there's not this linear thing.
No.
It's not just the more you get is the worse
and
it gets.
That goes also into the area of physics, because many people, they report, for instance, the average exposure level, which in a room could be very low, but the spikes could be more than colossal. And you have to report all of it, of course, you know.
Yeah. So I know that there are sort of limits that are set, ICNIRP, the specific absorption rate, and these seem to be way too high for safe levels.
Yeah.
Because I think they're based on very old, the thermal levels, which is completely erroneous when we're talking about non-thermal
and
effects.
And they are so artificial, because they are based on a fluid-filled plastic head.
Yes.
Which makes one call 6, 10, or 30 minutes long once in its lifetime. And the thermal effect is not even measured with a thermometer. It's calculated. So what has that to do with reality?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, not even Swedes are fluid-filled plastic dolls, you know. So, no, really. And most people, they make at least a few other calls, and most make a lot of calls during their lifetime. So, hey, and we even wrote a paper about that, that the SAR is nothing to do with reality. And we also wrote another paper pointing to that experiments, especially when you do observations, needs to be placed in real environments, not artificial laboratory environments.
Yeah. Because you remove it so far from reality. Yeah. How do you get results? Yeah. How do you apply them back to reality?
Yeah,
that's a problem with science in general, I think.
But here, especially much, you know. Yeah. And you get a feeling that the industry might have wished to use observation method that wouldn't give any results, like the SAR. But they claim that they didn't wish anything, because they say it's only a technical measurement. Mm. And then it works perfectly fine if you're going to develop a new antenna for your aircraft, for instance. Mm. Perfectly fine. But it cannot be transposed then into medicine and biology. And they pointed that out very clearly at the conference in London, actually. The only problem was that the person, the head of ICNIRP, Paolo Vecchia, the day after at the Institute of Physics, completely had forgotten what I said the day before.
Right.
So I think the old Indian books, you know, Indian and Cowboys, they said that the white man talks with a forked tongue, lying, you know. So I sat there and thought, he's just lying.
Do you have ideas about what those levels should be? Like, do you have you or groups proposed revised?
Yes, we have.
What would the world look like if...
Oh, that's very simple. And I proposed it here in Stockholm, actually, at the trade union meeting. And one of my most fierce opponents was there. And after I had proposed this, he actually said this: I never believe Olle Johansson, but this time I have to say he's completely right. And what I said was that we need to turn it off and go back to natural exposure levels.
Really?
And we wouldn't lose out anything. You would still get your surf time, but through a shielded wide cable, you know. So that kind of things, you know. And people often quote this as being the only hygienic safety level ever proposed, actually, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that would be 0.001 and so on, you know.
But that's just logic, though, isn't it? You don't need to be a scientist to figure that out.
Yeah.
You mentioned shielded cables. Why don't we use shielded cables?
Because good point. I don't know. Of course, they are more expensive.
Yeah.
But if we would then give the consumers that option, I guess the price would actually, over billions of miles of cable being needed to be changed, would be going down.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be any real difference. But today they are more expensive, of course.
Yeah.
But it's a good point. Why not?
Yeah. Because, I mean, I have a friend who's an electrical engineer, and he said man, so much could be solved by just earthing every single plug and shielding all the cables.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it would take care of so much of the issues. And, and that's a very simple sort of thing to do.
Yeah, I agree. And also, you know, from a more philosophical point of view, when you meet people that have all the gadgets in the world and they are out there, you know, they still haven't solved the basic issues. Famine, hunger, poverty, war, and so on. So I'm not so impressed by all these gadgets, I have to say. You know?
Yeah, I mean, if anything, they're making it worse.
Yeah, exactly.
The cobalt that's needed for the batteries. It's a disaster. I've seen a paper. This was done by a PhD student, Ali Masumi. She showed that 2.4 gigahertz radiation really damaged the beta islet cells in the pancreas.
Yeah.
In mice, at least.
Yeah.
The implications of this could be dramatic.
Yeah.
But you basically can't go anywhere where you look at your phone and there's no Wi-Fi signals available. And we've got a type 2 diabetes epidemic, which is, you know, continuing to rise with no end in sight.
Yeah.
What are the implications of potentially, you know, at the Wi-Fi that we have on in our homes is impacting our metabolism at that level?
Because I mean, you mentioned diabetes, but there are a lot of other issues around blood sugar level, blood fat levels, and so on, you know. Yeah. And it could have an enormous impact. And also, don't forget the behavioral impact. If we would rip people from their cell phones, laptops, and whatever, and force them out into the woods and walks and so on, you know, obesity could maybe be fought in a more successful way.
Yeah.
And we, again, we have tried many times to just wake central people that are in power to the idea that maybe you should look at this as well.
Yeah.
But no. And publications like these, crucially important, but the day after they are kind of forgotten, you know.
Yeah, no
and
one
again,
cites
no
them.
One stands in the subway screaming, you know.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I guess what do you do to sort of, you know, we're sitting here in an apartment complex where everyone's got their own Wi-Fi router.
Yeah.
How do we sort of deal with this as individuals? Yeah, you know, how do we navigate the world, because it's quite difficult to for the average person.
It's
to,
more than difficult. Yeah. I would say it's nearly impossible. Of course, you can always start with yourself and ask yourself if you and your family needs to have an electrical toothbrush or could brush it manually.
Yeah.
Could you whip the cream by hand? Do you need to sit hours and hours and hours by the television or the laptop or the cell phone, or could you actually do something else? And as you say, there are epidemics really regarding obesity, diabetes, and other metabolic issues, and we need to take them seriously. And I would say we are trying, but not along the full range. There are questions here to be addressed.
I think one of the simplest things is just to unplug.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think for people who are looking to try and take a step in the right direction, really just unplugging and getting distance is really key.
Yeah, I saw yesterday a television program, actually, and it was about unplugging and people who had moved into the countryside and they were doing completely other things. And that struck me that they were healthier. And above all, they seem to be content and happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a Swede, that's a red sign, you know. What can you be content and happy?
Yeah.
And they were, you know, so much different.
Yeah.
And they told the reporter that when they had lived, like in London, their life was just a stressful hell. They went to work at 6 in the morning, came back 10 o'clock in the evening and so on, every day, including Saturday and Sunday, you know. And as a woman said, I had no life. It was just always something. But now I have a life. So, no, I was envious.
Yeah, me too. And I think that's the goal for a lot of young people like myself. The goal really is to get back out, away from, you know, big populations.
Yeah.
And try and find somewhere where, you know, you don't see power lines, high voltage power lines.
No.
You're not seeing the cell tower across the road.
No, exactly.
And for people who are trying to find somewhere to set up, what should they be looking for in their local vicinity? You know, what should they be trying to, you know, base their decisions on as far as like where they're going to set up and have a family?
Wow. No, I would definitely start with the family level. And as I said, make a list, asking myself, my kids, do they have to eat purple cereals? Do they need to be on cell phones?
Yeah.
Or could I provide them with natural food and natural enjoyment?
Yeah.
And how would that look? Mm. And yeah, I mean, the entire list. Yeah, and that would include parents smoking, no, mm-hmm. alcohol, no, drugs, no, and so on, you know.
Yeah.
It's simple, I would say, you know. But it takes efforts, of course, to do it.
Mm-hmm. And ideally, you probably don't want to be, I don't know, within maybe a 1 kilometer radius of a tower or...
Well, the tower should, of course, be distant.
Mm-hmm.
And in Sweden, there are quite huge areas where there are no towers at all. And don't get it wrong now. You cannot have a cell phone because that will upgrade its output power enormously.
The further away it is.
Yeah. And we wrote the paper because it's so odd in Sweden. In the countryside, you have a higher incidence of Alzheimer's disease. And Alzheimer's could be due to exposure damages. There are scientists at Huddinge Hospital here in Stockholm that showed, I think it was mice, they got damages to their brain cells, especially in the areas for memory, including cell death even.
Mm.
And they are among the most detailed papers I've ever read.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, they are just colossally important, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And again... Mice, you can kill, chop off the head, take out the brain, but you cannot do that with your kid.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And does that have something to do with the myelin sheaths?
Could have.
Yeah,
we wrote the paper about the myelin impact. But again, we need more data. We need to investigate.
Yeah.
Sorry. And don't get me wrong, the type of studies we want to do, they are not rocket science.
Mm.
They are very simple. We need someone to say that, oh, we will support you economically. We will do it, you know.
It's so frustrating because it's like, you know that there's effects.
Yeah.
But until you show the exact pathway, no one's interested.
No, exactly.
Which by that point, I mean, if you know there's effects, why worry about what the specific pathway is? You know that there are effects.
Yeah.
But
going back to St. Peter and the pearly gates, maybe he will take the others in the queue by the ear saying, why didn't you listen to Ole Johansson and the others?
Yeah.
You stupid people, you know. Now you're died. Your kids died. And in the future, your grandkids will not even get any babies any longer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's a really big problem.
Well, it is.
And another thing that's very interesting to me, I mean, we're talking about the electromagnetic spectrum, but one of the things also with light is you can polarize lights
or the sunglasses
work. And, you know, light in nature, none of it's polarized. And what are the impacts of polarizing these sort of waves? I know it's difficult to think about electromagnetics in waves or particles or whatever, but you know, what are the implications of using
again,
polarized
energy? Again,
making
it more and more artificial.
Yeah.
The type of signals we're talking about for telecommunication and similar, they are polarized.
Yeah.
So again, you make sure that it will be very foreign and maybe alien and evil. From a cellular and molecular point of view, you know.
Mm.
So, but we tried.
Yeah. The further away it gets from nature, the more likely it is to reap detrimental
yes,
effects.
Oh, of course. Yes, of course, yeah.
Have you thought about writing a book?
No.
No, okay.
Well, I've thought about it.
Yeah.
But I haven't done that. But I've written a lot of scientific articles instead, you know, and book chapters.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Because there are so many good books out there, and I think it's really such a good entry point for a lot of people to start understanding.
Oh, yeah.
I know Arthur...
I don't feel there is a need, actually, for such a book from me, because there are so many good books.
Mm.
And I wrote... a foreword just a few weeks ago for a brand new book. It's about shielding your home and so on, all details around that. Very good, very well written.
Interesting.
Yes, very good indeed. And it has just been launched a few weeks ago.
Oh, right.
So it's out now. Yep. And when I get back home, I could send you the details.
Yeah. I would love that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think I've seen you write a paper about springs in mattresses.
Yes, yeah.
Very interesting sort of idea there. Why are springs potentially an issue? I mean, you're spending quite a bit of time on the bed.
Not the spring as such, but if there are metal springs,
yes,
which is mostly the case,
yeah,
especially in very expensive beds.
Mm.
Here in Sweden, we have a bed type called Hestens and similar, Kungsängen, for instance, and they could cost 50,000 Swedish crown, $5,000 easily.
Yeah.
And they're very nice to rest in, of course. But they will reflect the incoming electromagnetic fields.
Right.
And therefore, you might get much more exposed. And we compared with so-called futons, which are from Japan, containing only natural material, no reflections. And it seemed to have an impact on heart problems.
Ah.
Yeah. So, and again, a rising star, you can call it, in healthcare, people with heart problems. And don't get me wrong again. Of course, we must look at the whole person, what they eat, how they exercise, what they smoke, drink, etc. But we need to include also the electromagnetic fields and how they are exposed and what kind of impacts we see. And that part is not included. You never hear a medical doctor asking you about that. Never. They haven't got it on their scheme, you know.
Is it to do with the shape of the spring or the material, the metal?
Very good question.
Or is it both?
Very good. We don't know.
Ah.
But we talked with a physicist and he said, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
So he didn't know either. He said, this needs to be investigated. Probably it's a matter of the metal material rather than the coiled spring itself, but maybe it could be a combination.
It makes me worry about jewelry. You know, if you're wearing metal around your neck and your ears and you wear whatever.
And also metal frames in glasses.
Yes.
And there are studies from the British Consumer Organization pointing to that these would act as an antenna.
Yeah.
And people don't understand that the glasses, for instance, they're perfect antennas in length for telecommunication signals.
Interesting.
Yeah. So,
I saw,
as are bumblebees, wasps, that kind of insects. They're exactly the length for 5G.
That's very interesting.
And scary.
Yeah, very scary.
Did inventors of 5G have that on their table? No, because they came up with the wavelength that is completely body resonant.
Mm.
And as you see, a dramatic drop in pollinators around the world. Is it 3 years ago that it was reported? No, 2 years ago. That more than 90% of the honeybees are lost in Canada, more than 90% of the bumblebees in the United States. In Europe, we still have a good figure. It's 75% or worse. So
it's not really a good figure, though, is it?
No.
Yeah.
No, it's just crazy.
Wow. What are you working on now?
There is a lot of different projects.
Seems to happen when people retire, they get busier.
You know, I don't understand how I had time to work before, you know, because now I really need to work. And there are different things we are doing, but it goes very, very slowly because of the lack of resources.
Yeah.
So that could, of course, speed up things, but we are doing the best we can. And for instance, we found a train tunnel. You cannot tell anyone about this, you know, because we wanted to have an environment free of Wi-Fi signals.
Mm.
When we approached this tunnel, I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sources for Wi-Fi because there are big office buildings, living blocks and so on, you know. But then when you got into the tunnel, nothing at a certain point. I would say around maybe 50 meters in there, you know. But the odd thing is, there is still a 3 and 4G signal. And it's no antennas inside, nothing.
Yeah, right.
So it still leaks or creeps in, you know.
Yeah.
So we need to go further into the tunnel.
Wow.
So if I don't come back, then you know where to look for me. You know?
Well, I sincerely hope you keep doing this work because
I think
you know, there's very few things in science that are probably more important than these topics at this point in time.
Yeah.
And I can only hope that more people start waking up to the fact that these things do matter.
Yeah.
And perhaps they matter quite a lot.
Yeah, it could, And hopefully we are wrong.
I couldn't agree more. No. I think if there's any takeaway from this conversation is that I'm sure we would be the happiest people in the world if we were proven wrong right now.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I often think that, wouldn't that be great if we could be proven wrong? Because then we could just sort of sit back and go, okay.
And then we could instead attack other issues.
We could find, exactly.
Just in the biological as well as the health field, there is so many other very important issues to be addressed. For instance, tropical illnesses and diseases that are killing so many people unnecessarily.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that's such a great sort of sentiment to end on, that we're going to keep working.
Yeah.
We hope we're wrong.
Yeah.
But we're going to try and keep moving forward because the cost is too high to not keep looking at this. So
and the cost is low for me.
Yeah.
But it's high for everyone, especially the today yet unborn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, we know that there are effects even before birth.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I always get worried when I see pregnant women holding their phone. Yeah.
Oh, they often put their phone or their laptop on top of their big belly.
Yeah.
And I want to scream.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the more people we can get aware of this, I really believe in the butterfly effect. If you can just get one person.
Yeah. No, I agree.
The effects will be enormous. You. So I can't thank you enough for coming and giving.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. I really hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. I've left some links to Ole's work and importantly his fundraising page as well, where he has stressed that no amount is too small. Donations will be used to help fund important research on the biological effects of man-made electromagnetic fields. I have also left links to all of my platforms if you'd like to keep up with the podcast. Again, please feel free to support my work by subscribing to my Substack. This is the best way to help me keep doing what I'm doing while also getting access to more information about health and science. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Take care.